This is the Wheelhouse Podcast, back in the bunker. It's easily digestible. It's mostly factual. It's tired because it's had a big road trip. It's back. My name's Joel Spreadborough. I'm present. Catherine Bates, you're here in physical form.
In physical form. Also a little bit weary after a big Worlds campaign.
Why? What have you had on?
You'd have thought, I was about to say thunk, I'm tired.
You would have thunk it.
You would have thought that I'd actually raced with how tired I am. Alas, no, just the excitement of it.
Oh, what an extraordinary event. We're going to unpack a little bit of Worlds today. Really looking forward to that. We're going to talk about some interesting things today. I'm really interested to talk about sock heights and bum slides. That's coming up. It's all coming up.
As usual, covering the big issues here at the Wheelhouse.
Hard-hitting stuff.
Hard-hitting stuff.
But look, welcome back. Have you had a good recovery week, just quickly?
I have. Have you? You were also in Wollongong.
I've had a ripper of a week. I was inspired by Neve. I went on a ride wearing my black and white chamois.
Excellent.
And I got hit by a magpie. Oh. So I think it was taking revenge for all the shit canning of magpies I was doing down in Wollongong.
Speaking of shit canning, were you lucky that you were wearing your chamois while the magpie attacked you?
Very lucky I had the chamois on, let me tell you.
Now, it was a bit chamoist. They just don't go away.
It was like, how big is your nesting zone? You're being a bit greedy here because I feel like it followed me for like 2Ks. I'm like, are you serious? This your territory? This is a massive land grab, by the way, Mr. Magpie.
This is a bit much.
Look, just quietly,
you're lucky the seagulls stayed away from you. If your only problem is the magpies, you're doing better than Balcom Olimar. Let's just say that.
Let's stay on birds on the Wheelhouse Podcast, back in the bunker. Now, I want to ask you, we've spoken about magpies and seagulls. I want to talk about crows, okay?
Crows.
Now,
I seriously, when you said let's stay on birds, was like, please do not segue to a women's chat. I was like, come on now.
So Kate Bates.
I'm a bit relieved we're talking about crows.
Well, not specifically crows, but it's a handy segue to talk about the crow race. So let's go to Croatia
quickly because this is a bit of second tier drama,
I want to call it. Now, this is an extraordinary finish. We had, I think, stage two, one of the great photo finishes. What I love about it is B&B Hotels, Pierre Barbier thought he had it. Look at, if you're having a look at our socials, check out the image. There's nothing in it. Fist pumping, celebrating. He lost. Jonathan Milan, Bahrain victorious, kept his composure. But the Italian's done it by 0.4 milliseconds.
He was Bahrain victorious.
Sure was.
As it happens. Well, yes, I mean, we've seen some photo finishes in the past, but the question for me is when it's 0.004.
Yeah. You're good with
or
numbers
too. Or was it 0.0004? Either way, is that really enough? Like, can we really separate them by that? And I am curious how they do it. Whether it is, I mean, it is on the front wheel is how they do that separation. But yeah. I just don't know if it's that sensitive. I thought it was to the thousandth, so that would make sense.
Okay.
Not the tenth or the hundredth. But regardless, perhaps a tie?
Well, how big of a drama does this cause if it's a grand tour, it's a very decisive stage, something like that? I'm just saying 0.4 milliseconds is such a minuscule amount. Do you call ties? Is that even possible?
You can call ties, and it has been done in the past. I suppose for them, this is an important race. Certainly if it was Lotto Soudal and we're talking, or Arkea and we're talking about relegation battles, massive because there's UCI points on offer.
Yep.
If you're talking about winning a stage of the Tour de France, massive. The difference between being a stage winner and a one-time second place getter at the Tour, I mean, a slightly different ring about them.
Do you want to be the person that goes up to Mark Cavendish after a big sprint in the Tour and says, sorry, Cav, 0.4 milliseconds, you're done,
no,
you're out.
0.004. Like, it's so, you know, the old comment they say is a bee's whatnot.
It's
smaller than a bee's whatnot.
A bee's wing. Smaller than a bee's wing.
Yeah. Well, antenna. We'll go with that.
A bee's sting. Okay.
So I do think that if it's a thousandth, then it's a thousandth. And that's why they have sensitive cameras so that we look at it and go, come on now. You can't separate those, but you can.
Yeah.
So if we trust in the equipment, have to.
It's such a debate across so many sports, the role of tech. When it works, we all love it. When it counts against our team or our rider, we'll get rid of it.
I trust it more than I trust the naked eye.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think the naked eye could, you know, has a far smaller capacity to differentiate such minuscule B-wing time differences.
What an exciting result.
But I think
the
offensive thing is that poor Jonathan Milan celebrated. But how, why? He knew how close it was.
What's it going to do for French-Italian relations as well? Because Barbier, he was so excited.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's as bad as the French-Australian relations after the submarine gate.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think it's too bad. But
they got us back in the Bledisloe Cup already. So
I don't think early celebrations, they're not new. Yeah. So,
Look, we'll move on.
And Milan's winning, by the way. He's leading the tour.
Okay.
So we're okay.
Pushed on by a 0.00004 millisecond result. That would spur you on for the rest of the race, surely.
Indeed.
And I had a note here that I only wanted to talk about that for 0.04 milliseconds.
Oh, so we've got the clock.
Let's press on because I'm really excited because I noticed, as I'm sure the entire cycling world did, that your 41st cousin, Jonas Vingegaard, is back racing in Croatia.
He's back.
Now, loves his hills. I got a quick quote.
Loves his hills, yes.
You know what he said? He said, happy to be back. No expectations, just getting back in the saddle. Mm. I'm a little bit upset that there's no uphill finish. There's no uphill finish like I would prefer. My question to you, Jonas, cousin, what is wrong with you?
Well, look, firstly, I have to say, welcome back, Jonas. He took a big break after his Tour de France victory.
Yep.
What's quite important to note is that in the last decade of all of the Tour winners, it's only taken him 3 days worth of racing to have a victory.
Yep.
The next best is Pogacar. It took him 6 race days to have a victory after his 2020 Tour win. So it's monumental that he's come back and ridden so well. And if you hark back to the likes of Wiggins, or I was about to say the name that shall not be named, they didn't win a lot of races in between. And so I think for Vingegaard, he's doing a great job. Mm-hmm. But what I find really interesting is just the weight on his shoulders after he won that tour.
Yeah.
And I heard it perfectly surmised by Tom Dumoulin around his own journey, and he really struggled after his Giro victory with it. And he said he came into the sport, it was about him. It was a personal journey. How far could he go? What could he achieve?
Yep.
But after he won the Giro, it turned into pressure. It wasn't just about what he could achieve personally. It was now an expectation of teammates, of sponsors, of fans.
Yeah.
And it completely changed for him from going out there doing what he loved, hoping that he was successful, but at the end of the day, just wanting to be the very best he could.
Yep.
Massive difference. And I think that with Vingegaard, that really hit him, because going back to Denmark, after a Danish start for the Tour de France, no less,
yes,
on a private jet, getting an escort, arriving and standing on the balcony with literally tens of thousands of fans screaming his name, that's a game changer.
Oh,
no longer can he just go about his business and be a little bit anonymous. And not everybody's made for that.
No more loitering on street corners.
No.
Not after you've been escorted by Tom Cruise and the Top Gun squadron into Denmark. But look, I love how he's been so open and honest about that, because I had this thought, and I was actually going to ask you, it's like, this race is quite close to Wollongong. When you think about the physical side of it, it's like, could you not have just done Wollongong? But it's not about that. It's about the mental side and the strain and the different world that he's now living in.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, we could argue about whether it is a course for him, Wollongong was. I don't necessarily think it was.
Yeah.
But I think far more than that, and we've talked about this in previous episodes, Joel, we've got to consider like the weight of the mental load that these athletes are carrying. He's young. If we want him to, if anybody wants to see him racing for another decade or so, we've got to let him do it on his terms.
Yeah.
I mean, look at us. We're sitting here commenting on his mental health. So, you know, I think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're entertainers, and I think fans need to let them entertain when they're ready to entertain and not demand things off them.
And look, good on him for having the maturity to speak out like that and just be like, no, this is where I need to be. And we've spoken about it before. You're seeing more and more of it in the sport, which does lead to bigger questions about scheduling and all of that kind of thing. We won't get into that today, but good to see him back in Croatia. Mm. Not his course, not hilly enough. He's like, I was really hoping for some 30, 40% gradients. But anyway, next time. Now, speaking of courses and courses that are perfectly designed for people, now, a name that we did, it mentioned on the Wheelhouse podcast, easily digestible, mostly factual, you gave some top fives for the elite men's and women's road races, a name that snuck in there, but we were kind of like, we'll see, was Remco Evenepoel. Now, new nickname for him that you coined, I believe.
Remco Red Shoes.
Remco Red Shoes.
Well, he had beautiful red shoes and matching helmet. Like, fashion points to him.
I love that.
First and foremost. But I also, we had a giggle we normally do about people's pronunciation. Now, I got scuppered a few times, I must add. Not just the Europeans in trouble, but even a Pole.
I heard that a lot too.
Even a Pole.
Even a Pole.
No,
yeah.
He's not a Pole.
He's not, definitely not.
He's not even a Pole. No. Evenepoel. And I actually had to do a few voice notes for people who were saying, how do we pronounce his name properly, from some of the radio and promos we were doing down there around the coverage. So a bit of a tough one. But how good is he?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm a big fan. I wasn't. Remember?
I wasn't
a huge fan.
Are you on now?
It's not that I wasn't a fan. I was just like, he seems a little bit douchey.
A bit of a flash in the pan too, potentially. But that's becoming more and more less likely with this. That's what we were saying. Wollongong, look, nice to have you here. Rem, we'll put you in the top five because you're great. But good luck winning it, pal.
I mean, I thought even hugely talented, but I've found until recently, I was like, but he's a bit of ego and I can respect him as an athlete, but I'm not sure if I'd like to hang out with him. I mean, I say that like I have the option, like we get to be friends with any of them so like. But actually, I've really come around to that. I was really happy to see him win and I think he was a very gracious winner, made massive history in doing it too.
Yeah.
He was the last 22-year-old to win Elite Worlds was Greg LeMond in 1983.
Okay.
He also, Greg LeMond, won the Junior World Championships four years earlier than that, just like Remco.
Yeah.
He then went on to win the Tour and have this incredible career. So I think that, you know, if we're looking at trajectories here and comparisons, he's a great. But I must say, I got to meet him, Joel.
No, I know you did.
I did.
Now, you have a lot of credentials, former athlete, world champion, if I may, Commonwealth Games, all of that. You can now add serious sport journalist to that because you corralled Remco and you gave him a really searing inquisition. Don't take it from me. Let's check out Kate Bates meets Remco Evenepoel.
The Wheelhouse Cycling Podcast. Have you listened to the podcast? No, that's not my question. Greg LeMond won the Junior World Championships in...
I actually did listen.
No, it's the truth. Well, you will now.
See, there you go. Asking the hard questions.
Shout out, Remco. Thanks for listening.
He was a really good sport. I think at first he was a bit like, huh? And then he was like, yeah, like cheeky. I liked
that. He was listening to it during the race because no radios, whatever. Like, I just listened to the Wheelhouse.
I just thought that, like, really cool, really chill, really relaxed, a little bit cheeky.
Yeah.
I loved it. And, I mean, we've got a famous fan.
I love that you're leading with the most important. You've just won a world championship. First question, do you listen to the podcast? That was so well done.
I know, but I got a bit nervous and I was like, oh, no, that's not my question because I didn't want to offend him.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually a good reminder for me that I've been there. I've been sitting in a press conference wearing rainbow jerseys.
Yeah.
But I love the sport so much that I still want to have an enormous amount of respect for them.
Of course, yeah.
And actually sometimes that butts heads a bit with the role I play in media and broadcasting because a lot of the time I'm understanding of how the athletes feel.
Sure.
And in my first decade of doing it, I felt conflicted a bit asking some really hard questions. I wanted to know the answers and I thought the fans and public deserve the answers.
Yeah.
But I also knew what the experience was like for them.
When you're getting grilled.
Yeah. And it's even the same with chasing athletes for interviews after stages of the Tour de France or something like that. And I did that my first year in the job. I actually was chasing Cadel Evans in the Tour de France the year after he won. So it was 2012 and it was the day that he essentially lost the 2012 Tour de France. And I had to chase him for an interview and there was, I got to say 100 press crews.
A minor press pack.
And I quite literally got on my knees and crawled between people's legs because I'm like, hey, I'm the Aussie here. he's mine.
Get out of the way.
And I kind of popped up with the microphone. But I reflect back on that and my voice is very soft when talking to him because I could see in his eyes how broken he was. And I couldn't, I struggled to be able to ask the really tough questions when I could see how much he was hurting. Mm-hmm. And I did ask the right questions, but in a very kind of meek voice. And so it's an interesting reflection that even a decade on, I asked the question to Remco about whether he listened to The Wheelhouse, and I'm so glad he does. Yeah. But I immediately thought, oh, I don't want him to think I'm disrespectful.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting exchange from both sides. But
well done.
I like him.
A bit of athlete empathy from there, especially when you were emotional, considering he had just stolen the thunder from your mate, Wout Van Aert. I'm not going to go into it too much, really quickly.
I think Ineos are trying to steal the thunder from both of them.
Yeah.
Have you heard about this?
Of course, yeah. So what's going on with Ineos at the moment? Is he the new Richie?
Well, no. I think he's more than Richie, said with all due respect to Richie. But Jim Ratcliffe... Sir Jim Ratcliffe, I might say, the billionaire behind Ineos, apparently said to Brailsford, get out there and get him.
Mm-hmm.
I want him on our team. And Ineos are kind of restructuring a little bit. They've let go of a few team directors, bringing a few in, signing some interesting contracts and having a bit more of a long-term approach to it. Remco would be a perfect fit for them to rebuild a Tour de France team.
Mm-hmm.
And also realistically, Remco's on Quickstep is going to have a heck of a time beating the riders on Ineos, on Jumbo, for example. They have much better tour teams and UAE. So as talented as he is, he would have definitely thought, oh, curious offer. But, and here's a big one for me, Joel. Lefebvre came out and said, you know, not for $100 million would I sell him. He's not going anywhere. There is 0% chance he's going anywhere.
Yep.
But my problem with that is that they're talking about him like he's a piece of property.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's no human in that.
He's
no.
A commodity.
Yes,
yeah.
I will not let him go. I will not sell him. Like, are we really wondering why these guys kind of, you know, lose their minds?
We're seeing some pictures, if you're listening in, the extraordinary win in Wollongong where he just pulled and pulled and pulled away. Look, obviously hot property, but again, still a human and still, you know, has some faculty over his own decisions. There's
well,
a bit
he's,
of
but he
Tom
doesn't.
Parker
That's the thing.
This.
He doesn't have any autonomy over his decisions now. And, you know, beautiful vision of him winning the world championship. He crossed the line with his arms. He gave a bit of a gesture and tapped his Belgian colours.
Yep.
22 years of age, huge moment in history for him to win. It brings up the point very quickly on race radios, Joel, because they race without radios at Olympics and Worlds, but usually they have them. And so then it takes a certain racecraft that you don't necessarily need in some of the other races. And that's one reason why winning the world championships is harder, but a little bit more special because it goes to a lot of your nous, not just what you're being told, but what you feel out there racing.
And he's spoken about that a lot, that feeling of just, look, you know what? I'm going to go for it. I'm going to do it.
Yep.
And I'm going to need to ask your guy, your man, your friend, your Wout.
Mm.
Did he let you down in Wollongong? What happened?
No, I mean, he still did well.
Yep.
He was fourth. Listen to us.
I love that.
About
fourth.
It like it's a crap performance. No, he did well. It's been a massive season for him and he wanted success there, but the way he spoke about it was also Remco and I are equal leaders and we will support each other and we just want a gold medal for Belgium. I think it would have hurt him a little bit because he would have loved to have been the one, but Remco rode tremendously well. And so I think that at the end of the day, you know, he's still got plenty of years to come. But apparently he's hiking in the Blue Mountains with his wife and small child. So holidaying in Australia.
As
so
you do.
So he needs a break and I think it's been a tremendous season.
Yeah.
And just really quickly as well, Julian Alaphilippe, you know, he's got so much panache and he's so savvy, but I haven't been a huge fan other than respecting his racing.
Mm.
I know that's offensive.
You know he's
to you.
My mate. Yeah, that's okay.
I know, sure. And I apologise. But at the end, he said that because he's teammate, French compatriot Christophe Laporte got second.
Got second, yeah.
He said to them, "I feel good, guys, but I don't feel so good that I'm going to ask any of you to work for me." And so actually that's also a big factor in why they didn't really chase, because it was, they weren't all in for Julian by his word. And I like okay. that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I think that's really honest of him. And I think that he didn't like the rainbows. I think it was a bit of a curse for him. So,
well, there's no more room in the cupboard, to be fair, because he's already got a few.
He's got a swag of them.
But, like, good on him. Again, we speak about that honesty and that integrity and all of that. It's being highlighted by some of the world's best, which is good to see. It's good for the sport, good for the kids, good for all of it. Good on
them. Just a lot of happy feelings in at the Wheelhouse Bunker today, aren't there?
A lot of happy feelings, hard questions being asked. I love athlete solidarity. Do you listen to the podcast?
Yes.
It's really good. On the Wheelhouse podcast, now let's chat about winners a little bit more, because your other mate, my mate too, proud member of the Trident, we've gone over the beauty and the extraordinary nature of Annemiek van Vleuten's win. Now, she's described it as her best ever victory. She's approaching 40. She had planned to retire at the end of next year. That's up in the air after an extraordinary performance with a fractured elbow. How long can she go for? What do you think?
I think she'll retire at the end of next year.
You reckon it's going to happen still?
Yeah, okay. She turns 40 in October, and an early happy birthday to Annemiek.
Yep.
And I love that we coined a documentary for her, yep. Shit to Champagne. I still think we should make that.
Great watch.
Fantastic. But, you know, I think something about her win is just the resilience and thinking on her feet. We talked about no race radios. That's why she's so good, because she can read a race and read the opportunities.
Yeah.
But I do think she'll retire at the end of next year, because her body is – we talked about this before, Joel. We talked about the fact that, like, we're in our preview that she could struggle with the descent, and because her skills aren't amazing. And also, while she does have good skills, she also manages to get herself in some pretty prickly situations that – she's broken so many bones, you know, how much can one body take? She's not even halfway through life yet, and it does take a toll. Cycling takes a massive toll, even on bone density for women. Like, it's a really big thing.
Yeah.
Women who have long cycling careers but don't do a lot of weight training or stuff like that often end up with kind of osteoporotic bones that become quite brittle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite an important thing for them to do walking or weights or something like that. And I think that she pushes her body to the limit in an exceptional way, but at some point, enough is enough. So it's not that she can't keep going, but I think there's life after it as well, and she'll have incredible opportunities. She can do whatever she wants after this. She's very smart. She's very savvy, whether she wants to work in cycling in terms of, like, as a team director or something like that, whether she wants to go into media and commentating.
On the Wheelhouse.
She wants to join the Wheelhouse, you know, like a Dutch edition. Ooh.
Talks have been initiated, that's all I'll say.
Might talk to Merksy about that.
It's a good idea.
River City Studios, sure they'd be happy to have the Dutch team in here.
I've dispatched a missive. We'll see how we go on that. But what I just loved it. I love, she said, "I spent 159 kilometres riding for Marianne Vos." And then just, you know what? Here we go.
Yeah, but Voss wasn't there. So she did perfectly.
Yeah.
And she's remarkable.
Yeah. Doing it in the back of her mind. It's beautifully done.
Yeah.
Was the victory diminished by what I'd like to describe as one of the most dreaded of all UCI punishments?
Oh, yes.
The sock height fine and also a skin suit infraction. So a double whammy there. How are you infracting skin suits?
Well, she went back to the car. This is very funny exchange, and it was such a fleeting moment, but I got told about it afterwards. I didn't see it on the coverage at all, but it got relayed to me from one of the Dutch journalists. She went back to the car realizing quite early that she'd started in an aero skin suit, which is for a time trial but is illegal in a road race.
Okay.
And she realized, so she went back to the car and was talking to them about, have you got a jersey in there? Like, what am I going to do about this? And apparently she muttered the line, "Well, I can't ride naked." Like, they said to her, "We don't have that." And she said, "Well, I can't ride naked." And then they gave her a jersey to put over the top of it.
Sure.
But I love that. Like, that's her retort halfway through a world championship race where she's got a broken elbow and she's making jokes about
having a quip.
Nuding up.
Yeah. She's like, look, if I absolutely have to, sure, but I don't want to.
Yes. Well, I'm going to dig out and bring it on here on a day where we're feeling quite mentally robust, Joel. There is a photo shoot out there somewhere of Chris Froome sans clothing on a bike.
Okay.
So we'll find that
yep.
and apologise in advance to everybody when we bring that one out.
I'm curious on socks, if you don't mind.
Yes, because she went from the aero jersey, like aero skin suit, fixed that one with the jersey, but got fined 200 Swiss francs for the socks.
200 francs?
200 francs.
That's quite a...
Well, your sock length, they measure it on the start line. I'm not even kidding. The UCI is so quirky. To be use a kind word.
We were talking about equipment rules and all of that. It's quirky doesn't even do it justice.
No.
This one.
So the socks aren't allowed to be longer than 50% of your tibia and fibula as measured by tape. And the reason they do it is because these socks are super aerodynamic, like way more aerodynamic than legs. And so that's why they've put a cap on it. But we found out, we did a little bit of hunting, didn't we, Joel?
Yes.
How much these aero socks are worth.
Whew.
They are worth €1,000, which is about $1,400 Australian dollars. Fastest sock on the planet.
Now, I love this. It's ambitious marketing. Now, the company Socketone E1000s. Now, have you got a couple of pairs in your cupboard at home or in your drawer?
A couple, yeah.
Just a handful.
They do for my coffee rides. It's Michael Matthews wears them as well.
I don't expect like a full breakdown of the composition of the socks, but why are they the fastest socks on the planet?
Well, I'm not an aerodynamicist, so I can't do that. But they are. It's all aerodynamics. So they know that material is definitely faster than skin.
Okay.
And these socks have a whole lot of research, development, science, aerodynamic focus amongst them.
I'm going to get on the phone to them. I'm going to lead with the most important question. Do you listen to the Wheelhouse podcast? Then I'm going to ask about the socks. Is this too high? Would I be in trouble?
They're illegal.
They're illegal?
I mean, they're illegal for racing. I think they should just be illegal in general. Rick and Morty.
They're my Rick and Morty socks.
I know. I mean, if you're watching along, you would have just seen a hairy leg and some really lovely socks.
Thank you.
Rick
Fastest
and Morty.
Socks on the planet.
Heavens, they are not. I don't think they're fast socks, Joel. But.
No.
I'll get Champ Sis to send you some.
Thank you, Champ Sis. There's a lot going into a sock to put a €1,000 price tag on it to call it the fastest sock on the planet. We'll continue to explore socks on the Wheelhouse podcast because I'm fascinated by it.
Mm.
You know I'd never wear long socks because it would cover up my Darth Vader tattoo. And there's my Star Wars mention for the week. Tick. Now, let's move on because we're talking about lots of things on the Wheelhouse podcast, but what I love is when fans rally behind someone who's doing it a bit tough, or someone who's had a controversial outcome or something like that. Now, we've seen this happen in very 2022 fashion this week. So as we know very well, Matthew Vanderpool had an unfortunate night the night before the Men's Elite Road race. So I ended up getting fined and getting knocked on the door, having a moment with some young teenagers, grabbing one of them by the arm. Not the best incident. His fans, have taken to the interwebs and absolutely smashed the hotel that he was staying in. Oh, I won't name the hotel. It's not about that. Given it, ensured that it had a one-star rating. None of them have ever stayed there. They just went and trolled it.
Yeah, that's a bit average.
And questioned, what kind of hotel has teenagers running around at night? Blah, blah, blah. Why can't an athlete get a good night's sleep? All of this kind of thing.
Mm.
They've trailed it down to about one star.
That's not fair.
That's a tough one, I think.
I don't like that. Look, terrible situation. I don't think there's any winners in this.
I agree.
Kids did the wrong thing. Matthew Vanderpool did the wrong thing. He half tackled them while wearing underpants, and they were 13 and 14-year-old girls.
Young girls, yeah.
But we also know how incredibly frustrated he would have been in that moment. So I think what he did was wrong. We understand why he was frustrated.
Yep.
No winners.
There's no winners.
But
that's
come
how
on now,
it.
Don't troll the hotel. Like, that's just adding more crap to the pile.
Yeah. You know what they could have done, honestly? Throw the hat around. and help him pay his $1,500
that
fine.
That would have been a practical way to support him.
Constructive
exactly.
trolling.
Constructive
yeah.
trolling.
Yeah.
That's a I'm going to write that down
you
as
can
a
have
term.
That one. What's he going like to think of that. Australia now, though? Like things like
oh,
that.
I don't
like,
think he'll be a fan of Australia. That,
that's
but,
a
you
that's
know.
A country tarnishing series of events
it
in,
is.
In his mind.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I think he's also, even though he lost his banana in that moment, he's pretty mature about it. He's come
he lost
out.
His banana. Yeah, just the one banana. Yeah.
Just one. And he has said, I did the wrong thing. I yep. didn't react properly. So I think that he will be very upset, frustrated, and a bit bitter about it all. But honestly, I don't think for him he'll hate Australia.
Yeah.
Like his fans might in his defence.
In his defence.
But I don't think he will.
Oh,
like
it's easy to get.
Got a great you know. Head on his shoulders and,
yeah.
you know, I once got disqualified in a race in Slovenia and I don't hate Slovenia. I mean,
okay.
I've never been back, but, you know.
Yeah.
These things happen.
Well, you're mates with the king.
Oh, yes,
king,
indeed.
King Pogacar. Yeah,
I'd
so
be
that helps.
I'd be allowed back in.
Yeah. yeah. You have diplomatic immunity due to your friendship with King
yes,
Pogacar.
Exactly.
Okay. Look, I think throughout your career, I'm sure knock and runs, all that sort of thing, if it would have happened, it would have really got a bee in your bonnet. It would have been worse if it was a flaming bag of dog poo. At least they held they drew the line there. That's good.
I don't know where you came up with that one, but yes, please no one ever do that.
No. Okay. Mm. Well, look, it's over now. Hopefully he comes back on the Wheelhouse podcast. Easily digestible. Mostly factual. Now, Kate, we love having great guests on this show. We've had some absolute rippers. I wanted to keep the trend going this week, so I took some initiative. I made a few calls.
Oh, dear.
I rang Lance Armstrong. I rang George Hincapie. I rang Mark Cavendish. I rang Bradley Wiggins. I rang Jan Ulrich. I rang Johan Breineel. Okay. They all said they were busy. And I was like, okay, that's fine. No worries at all. I went on Twitter. Guess what I saw? All of them together posing for a photo in Mallorca. Now, this is the part that really hurts. Guess what they were doing? They were doing another podcast.
Do you think your invite got lost in the mail?
I need to ring Lance back and ask why the Move podcast was filming in a restaurant bar in Mallorca.
Mallorca's lovely, by the way. That's where I won my world title.
That's
I
so
have
cool.
a very close affinity
so
to Mallorca.
Why weren't you invited then?
Why wasn't I invited? I know. Well, look, I think that it's kind of like the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen in one way. Like, what a it's like a fantasy team.
Well, our
if you were building a fantasy team. You've got every box ticked.
That's very true.
With this mob.
It's an all-time. It's a Hall of Fame team. Our friends at Cycling Tips called it the Marvel Cinematic Universe of cycling. I've called it, I want to call it cycling's version of the roof of the Sistine Chapel.
Oh, yes. I like. It's a bit of a hard one, though, because there's some villains.
Mm-hmm.
But
angels and demons, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of Cav, and we've talked about how he's a little bit misunderstood and a bit of a bad boy, but I know him and he's a great guy. In fact, I raced with both George Hincapie and Mark Cavendish. They were on T-Mobile when I was there. Jan had left the year before. I raced with Wiggo a lot on the track. They're good people. However, there's some checkered history in there as well. Johan Breineel, I believe, is still banned from entering the United States of America for some tax reasons.
Okay.
And or fines. He's amassed a number of fines that he would have to pay or potentially go to jail if he goes back. And I think we know enough about Lance Armstrong.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
How do you feel about it all?
You're talking about his cameo in the movie Dodgeball. Right?
No.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I mean, I think in general, so for example, the stat I gave you before around Remco being the younger, you know, the only 22-year-old since 1983, that's actually not true. He's the youngest since 1993 when Lance Armstrong won the World Championships. But I struggle with how much of his career to write off.
Yeah, I know. And that, it's such an...
It's tough. But I also think that he was exceptionally talented and he shouldn't have doped because he didn't need to.
He was good enough without it.
He was, well, I don't
there's,
know.
Look, there's an episode in that. I, at the end of the day, they're there doing his podcast, not here in the bunker doing ours. We'll get there.
He is very divisive, though. Like, these images would stir up a lot of emotions in people and there would be a lot of judgment for Cav for going over there and being part of it.
Yep.
He's the only active rider amongst them, although maybe this is showing us that he's no longer an active rider. He's clearly not racing anymore this season.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So we haven't heard what team he's going to. Maybe this is
this
his...
This is a spoiler.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. But, you know, yeah.
Could
Armstrong,
be.
Armstrong, it's a really tough one.
An interesting one, and there would have been a lot of... you know, polar opposite feedback, I guess, from different fans seeing that one. A lot of photoshopping certain members. You noticed Lance was right on the side, maybe just taking
I mean,
him
he's
out
a really, the podcast is great.
It's a great
And he's
podcast.
Really interesting, but yeah. I can't really forgive him. But
having
you know.
Said that, if he wants to come on the Wheelhouse podcast, we can talk. Let's yeah. If we can do a special episode in Mallorca. You know, we could have been there. This is what gets me. It only would have cost us $30,000 to go as a fan to be part of Lance's move in Mallorca tour. That's 30 grand. Like, hello.
A pop. So,
yeah.
There's three of us.
We've missed a trick
with Merksy,
there.
We can't go without Merksy. We wouldn't even know how to put our headphones on properly. Let's be honest.
A polarizing photo, but at the same time, they knew that. They know what they've
yeah.
done.
But, you know, I think as we have to let people make mistakes and move on.
And move on.
I think that if Lance Armstrong wasn't such an asshole, that people would have forgiven him a long time ago because they've forgiven everybody else who doped.
Mm.
It's just that they thought he was a bit of a douche canoe.
Excellent little stickler part of it. Okay.
Yeah. But let's, you know, enjoy that they're all smiling heartily and that they're not bad people, or at least five of them aren't.
Yeah. Most of them are okay. Look,
yeah.
They're in their little bubble having a smile, having some sparkling water. Good on them. We'll try again next week.
Yeah, now, we'll try and get invited next time.
I'm really interested in cyclocross. You know this. I've said it before. One of the main reasons I'm interested in it is because you have the ability to get off your bike and slide down mud hills on your ass. Okay? Now, I'll call it the bum slide. If you're listening on, you can go to our socials, check out some images of riders jumping off, going for a little bum slide, then getting back on.
Yeah, it was Rochester Cross. It's in New York State.
Yep.
So, you know, directly north is Prince Edward Island, and over off to the west is Niagara Falls. So there's your geography. So you can understand that in that part of the world, it is a bit wet and cold. All the conditions that are perfect for a cyclocross event.
Yeah.
A lot of mud. And this race has been around since 2008. It's part of the US Cyclocross Series, which is a kind of category two of the UCI Cyclocross Series. We're going to learn a lot more about cyclocross as this season unfolds because it's just about the international season has just been released, all of the World Cups. So when that gets kicked off, we'll have to have a dive into that.
Oh, big time.
Because a lot of our big names, Tom Pidcock, for example, is planning on doing a lot of the cross season. So that's really cool.
It is.
But it looks fun. It's been around since about 1902, I believe, when the French Federation held their first national championship and then kind of got to international after that.
Yep.
But you don't have to ride your bike.
You
don't even have to hold on to your bike. You just have to get around the course with your bike finishing with you.
Yeah.
And if it slides next to you at some point, then so be it.
Well, it would have been a phenomenon in 1902.
Yes.
The commentary's like, what are they having here? Oh, no, he's disembarking from his bicycle and sliding down the hill on his bottom. I've never seen anything like it.
Well, it started in France, but similar.
He is disembarking from the... Okay. Doesn't matter, but it's interesting. Really
it
interested
is.
To learn more about it and do as much bum sliding as I can. I also love that they're uphill, slip and sliding this.
I know, like they're running into each other, aren't they?
Yes.
It's almost like they just... We're given no chance, but
it's
that's
like
course design.
Do you remember Mugby? Do you ever play Mugby?
I don't. Sounds
it's like
mud
rugby,
wrestling.
But you just mug anyone who's got the ball. In this one, it's like you mug everyone else who's got a bike, which is everyone. So you just mug each other.
That
as you
sounds
go
great.
Hill. Yeah, it's good
with
fun.
A whole lot of mud. Yeah,
we're all about exclusives and big scoops here on the Wheelhouse Podcast. A few weeks ago, we chatted about a little initiative that was invented over a bottle of red wine, which all good ideas are. This is awesome. So a massive shout out to Pat Shaw. And the team.
Mm.
And the team, I'm going to say now, and the team, Kate Bates.
Mm.
Wow. What an outcome.
Pat Shaw and his merry women. I don't know what the team's actually going to be called. Not that,
we'll
I'd
send
suggest.
Send them that one. Yeah.
But they have done an incredible job. They've raised over $100,000 to be able to put together a women's team in the NRS. And the NRS is our big feeder to then go internationally. And if we learnt anything from Wollongong, it's without these opportunities, the Aussies in particular are so far away from Europe, they just can't do it. So They're looking to enter a team at the Tour Down Under. I believe that in the next couple of weeks, all of the details will be released in terms of the staffing and the riders that have been signed. But I understand that there's some really big names,
yep.
even in the staff, some really big names in Oz Cycling that they've managed to secure. So I'm so excited for it. And it's the way, it's literally the people's team.
That's awesome.
You know, like yeah. way to, if you can get so many people donating money that you've got over $100,000 for the team, they're your fans. They are invested. And any sponsors that come on board after that, these fans will support as well.
Yeah.
I think it's a really sustainable model moving forward. And, you know, this may be something we see again, but good on Pat Shaw for doing it and, yeah. you know, really pushing hard. And he's been doing the media circuit, trying to drum up as much support. I love it.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's amazing. And no one was 100% sure. Like, good, like, great idea. I hope it works. But, gee, it's going to be tough.
Well, I think we need to pitch for a spot on the jersey.
There you go. Yes. When's Pat coming on?
Yes. A couple of weeks we'll have yeah. a chat to him when they sort out some more of the details and then we can hear it all from them. But I'm thinking just a little on the front of the shirt for the victories or maybe on the back for the aerial shots.
Sure, sure.
I don't know, but...
Okay, well,
official
that's
team for us.
Throw it out there. Mm. That's throw them and they shall come. That's fantastic. Could have had him this week, but Lance and that all stuffed up my... that's okay. Now, we're going to finish on a bit of history on the Wheelhouse podcast just quickly. So, the Gravel Worlds coming up early October, 8th and 9th, I believe. 70% dirt and cobbles. It's what it's all about. What I love about it, that we're talking about history. The designers very much got the brief. Yes. They're starting at a UNESCO World Heritage site in Vicenza.
Yes.
And they're going by the city of Padua. This is very special for me. I went to Padua High School, not in Italy. There's one in Australia. they finish at a medieval walled city of Cittadella.
How beautiful.
Hello. That is just... the sport continues to outdo itself.
Well, that's a massive weekend too because it's also the Giro de Lombardia, which is the final monument of the season and hopefully even a pole will be riding there in the rainbows. It's also the weekend that Filippo Ganna is attempting his hour record and Gravel World. But what I love about Gravel World is that a lot of the road athletes and pro tour racers are jumping across.
Sure.
So we've got Tiffany Cromwell.
Yep.
She's riding for the Aussies. I believe that Rachel Nalan has been given an invite and maybe heading back to do that as well. So it's a relatively new discipline. It's especially at UCI level, but it's so cool and so many athletes are involved in it. And it's a real middle ground between mountain bike and road. And there's a lot of road riders who definitely don't have the skills or even the physiology for mountain bike because it's a lot more dynamic, very different. Gravel's right in the middle.
Your mate,
it's beautiful.
Peter, am I correct? Is my male right? He did the
He did the mountain bikes.
He did the mountain. He's not doing gravel as well.
I don't think so.
Okay. No. I'll ring him and double check because I'll see if he wants to come.
But
on
I
the
had
show
a big
well.
Birthday this year and I bought myself the most glorious specialized gravel bike.
Yep.
I'm yet to really christen it on the gravel, to be honest. I've been riding it around the streets, but it's the comfiest bike I've ever ridden.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So, you know, I think that...
Where's mine?
It's getting... where is Joel's? Come on, people. No, I think it's gaining a lot of traction and it's just really cool. And I love that we have so many people on bikes now that they're getting to bring in these new disciplines. They've got these new bikes and technology. It's just really cool. Listen Niamh, to me. I love it.
We were chatting to Niamh recently, crowned under 23 women's the first world champion. She's like, I love my gravel.
Yes, she's got a bit of a gravel history.
Is she going?
She's not. She's very good. But I mean, maybe Yuri Sagan, because you said Pedo, he's not there, but maybe Yuri's going.
Oh, is Yuri going? Okay.
Well, I don't know.
I'm sure a Sagan will be present.
He actually, after he was in the break all day in Wollongong. Great ride, Yuri.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Great to have a Sagan
Repping.
In the break.
Yeah.
He didn't finish, but he did retire. I don't know if he announced it, not just from the race, I mean, Joel. I mean, he retired.
He's done. He's cooked.
From his career.
Put a fork in him.
He's done.
Okay.
I don't know if he waited till the end of the race or whether he like pulled in to the feed zone and was like,
That's he's going. By the way, guys, I'm going to retire after this.
Yeah. One more lap and I'm done. I'm done. So, you know, big name retirement.
Indeed.
A Sagan.
A Sagan. As long as there is a Sagan in the building yes. at any given time.
Yes.
I had read Peter speaking about it a while back. Let's see what unfolds. Either way, history being made in a historic course at the World Grabber. We'll chat about that a lot more.
Yes,
I'm
indeed.
Sure.
What a week it's been.
Oh, it's been fun. Welcome back to the bunker.
I know. It's great to be back and so much coming up as well.
I'm Joel Spreadborough.
I'm Kate present. Bates.
You're also
I'm present.
Also present. Thank you.
Thank you, Joel. What a pleasure it's been.
Yeah.
Well, so much more coming up. So
the Wheelhouse
let's
podcast.
Reconvene.
Yeah, we shall reconvene on the Wheelhouse podcast. It's easily digestible. It's mostly factual. And it's coming at you right now.
The Wheelhouse is produced by River City Studios for Listener. Executive produced by Luke Mears and the mysterious Merksy. It's written and hosted by Kate Bates and me, Joel Spreadborough.